Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Smoko Podcast. My name is Alexis Armstrong, your host. Nice to meet you. The Smoko Podcast is the place to celebrate and highlight women, trans women, and non-binary folk working within STEM and trade occupations. So please tune in, take a break, join us. We are on Smoko. And today we are extremely lucky that we are joined by the lovely Sinead Clarkson, who's going to come on and talk about all things quantity surveying. And so we're going to talk a little bit about her experience working within the construction industry, her experience as a quantity surveyor, her education, both her apprenticeship and her dissertation, so her thesis, because it's pretty incredible and has some really cool stuff there. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about her advocacy, because she's been a huge advocate for women in construction, being both a member of Girls Under Construction and NAWIC, which is the National Association of Women in Construction. So Sinead, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for coming and having this conversation.
No, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's so lovely to finally meet you. And I think one thing that really stood out when I was doing my research for you is that I didn't really know what a quantity surveyor does. So maybe if we could start there, what drew you to becoming a quantity surveyor? What about it that you were like, yes, I love this, this is for me? And then could you kind of walk through what you guys actually do? Because that was completely new to me. I had no idea that this position was a thing.
Yeah, that's actually really common. It's something that I come across quite a lot when I tell people out in the general public what I do. Nobody ever really knows what that is. So maybe I'll start with that. So a quantity surveyor, we're essentially construction professionals and we're experts in construction costs and contracts. So we estimate and control costs on construction projects, and that can be right from the very outset of a project when it's just an idea and a piece of land and a customer wants to know whether it's even feasible, if they can build something there for the money that they have, right through design and construction phases, managing all aspects of costs during construction. So your payment provisions, your valuation of your work, managing extras, allocating work packages, making sure the contract is adhered to, notice provisions, that kind of thing. And then right through to final account and seeing the building realised, right from when you've had as an idea all the way through. It's quite a cool role, really, because you get to see the whole process all the way through and you get to see how your decisions have helped that to become real, which is probably one of my favourite things about the role. In terms of why I decided to do it, I didn't decide. I always tell people it's a happy accident because I didn't know what a quantity surveyor was either. Nobody even,
when I was at school,
I didn't know what that was. Yeah. And I did A-levels in three sciences and maths, but I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do when I left school. No idea whatsoever. And my careers advisor at school pushed me towards medicine. So I was successful. I went and did a year of medical school and I hated it.
Okay.
It was the worst thing. The course that I did, you went straight into clinical practice from the first week. And I'm so glad I did that because I would not have survived.
Like, this is not for me. Yeah, it was instantly of being like, nope, yes, thank you very much, not for me.
Absolutely not. And it's not the kind of job where you can just sort of survive
and
do it and hate it, is it? It's really not that kind of career. So I made the decision to move onto a different course. And the options that I had were biomedical science or sports science. And I'm big into my cycling, so I thought I'll do sports science. And then in the second year of my sports science degree, we had a 6-week placement module. So we had to go and find a placement with something relevant to the degree.
Yeah.
I had one in a lab doing some research work organised. And I think it was about a week before I was due to go, the funding fell through and they weren't able to take me.
Yeah.
Which I was devastated at the time.
Yeah. That's very stressful.
Yeah, and it was so late, I couldn't find anything that was relevant. So I ended up taking a random placement from my university with a local plastering business.
Oh, that's crazy. That is a happy accident.
It is, and that's where I still work now. I worked there part-time whilst I finished my first degree, and then they put me through an apprenticeship and trained me up, and I completed that last year. So I graduated from uni, and I set my RICS chartership just last year.
Oh, congratulations. So,
thank you. It's been a long process and it's been a very wibbly-wobbly career pathway, but I like to tell people about it because I think it's important to show what you decide at 18 isn't the last choice you're going to make. And mm-hmm. even now at my age, there are so many things that I could do and diversify into and change about my career. You're not stuck with what you choose at 18. And I felt like as an 18-year-old, nobody told me that. And it was such a panic. It doesn't really matter as well if you have that wobble in your career path. It doesn't have to be a straight line. And I think that's really important to mm-hmm. tell young people.
I couldn't agree more. And I honestly, I love a good wibbly wobbly career path. Like, I think that means that it's more in line with who you are and like more authentic to what you actually want. Because I don't think that that happens very often, that someone at like age 7 or age 8 even, because that's kind of when it starts of being like, okay, what am I going to do with my career? And then all the way to 18, I don't think many people know exactly what they want and they go for it. And that never falters, that never changes. I think that's a very, very rare thing.
Yeah, definitely.
But thank you so much for kind of talking about what a quantity surveyor does, because I think that, yes, you're right. Like, not many people know that. But as soon as you start diving in to be like, okay, this is what this role does, and this is the role of a quantity surveyor, you guys are such a linchpin position in the construction industry. Like, it's so necessary to have somebody who does cost analysis and who really keeps you on track with costs and contracts. And like, that's really cool that it's from every single stage, from the beginning paper to a completed construction project. Like, that's pretty beautiful. And I could see that being really fulfilling, seeing a building and being like, yep, I was influential in that. And I made sure that we stayed on mark the entire way through. Like, that's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say even people in our industry sometimes don't know what a quantity surveyor actually does. You know, that sort of people in the trades are on site sometimes. I'll be walking around and they'll ask me what I'm doing, and I'll say, I'm a quantity surveyor. And they'll go, you're a what? So we're kind of like this, the secret force in the background, just making sure everything keeps happening. Us and project managers together in a little room.
Yeah, exactly, making sure everything happens all quietly, no one knows you're there. Like, yeah, that's really cool. That's actually kind of funny that some people in the industry don't know that you exist, but you are like so influential in the project. Like, you guys have to have that job, and that has to happen, or else you're going to be completely off track and scope is going to be way overboard than what it was supposed to. So that's really cool. That's a cool degree to follow.
And I think people don't even realize as well, the sort of scope of projects that require a quantity surveyor. So it's not just construction, as in the physical building of buildings, of houses, that kind of thing. But there's also all sorts of marketing now use quantity surveyors, sales, that kind of thing. And when they're implementing sort of national scale projects, they'll tend to have a quantity surveyor working, watching the costs and the budgets and everything. So it's not just confined to purely construction. You can sort of cross industries with it, which is really great.
I absolutely love that. One thing that kind of stood out on your story that I thought was so beautiful, of this like happy accident that, yeah, you're right. When you went into medicine, you can't really be a doctor that's like, meh, I just kind of only like my career. Like, I love that that led you to the shift of becoming a quantity surveyor. And it landed you with this position with this plastering company that you are currently still with, which is pretty beautiful. And I know that they helped you with degree apprenticeship. And I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something very UK specific, but it's also something extremely impressive that you did your degree apprenticeship while working full time. And if you could, what was the most fulfilling aspect of doing that? What was the most challenging aspect of this experience? Could you kind of just walk through what that looked like?
I love talking about degree apprenticeships, because it's another thing that's not really, it's the awareness is getting better now, and schools are sort of getting on board with telling people about it as an option, but it's still in general public, it's not really that well known about. So I absolutely, any chance I can get to talk about degree apprenticeships, I will. Okay. So mine involved over 5 years doing the degree one day per week. So I'd go to university one day per week, okay, and then I'd be in the workplace for the remaining 4 days. And then alongside that degree, in the final 2 years, I also did my RICS chartership. So with your degree apprenticeship, you have something called an endpoint assessment, which kind of like runs alongside, it's a skills part of your training. So it runs alongside your academic side of things. In terms of the most difficult thing, I'd say just the pure volume of things that they're asking you to do at once.
Yes, I could see that. Yeah.
You know, if you did an undergraduate degree full time, you'd do 3 years at uni and then you'd probably go into the workplace for 2 to 3 years and then you might do your chartership. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a degree apprenticeship, it's a full time job and it is a proper job. You're not, it's not sort of like, oh, you're just in training, so you're in the background mm-hmm. watching people. Like, I was running projects by sort of my third or fourth year. And then you've got your university work to do. And then you've got this chartership to do alongside. So the time management aspects of a degree apprenticeship is the hardest bit because you have to be really dedicated and really strict with yourself and just say, I have this much work to get done today after work hours or this much to do this weekend. And that's non-negotiable before I'm allowed to go and have my time off. But on the flip side of it, I found it was a really great way to learn because I'd be learning something at university and then I'd be going out into the workplace on site and putting that into practice the very next day.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Which was an absolutely fantastic way to learn. I'm not very good at sitting still and just listening and absorbing things. I need to go out there and do it. And so I really enjoyed that way of learning. And I think it does suit a lot of people quite well. And I've talked to quite a few students who are full-time and quite a few students who are apprentices, and the ones who are full-time often say they feel quite lost when they first join the industry.
Yeah,
because you're not out there, you're not getting to know people, you're not speaking to people, you're not doing things in a practical sense at university. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of the apprenticeship, is that you have all that experience all in one go, which is just great. I mean, don't get me wrong, day one, it's pretty terrifying. You go and you're just like,
oh my God, what's
it happening?
Sounds terrifying. Like, on paper, it sounds great. Like, when you're like, oh, I think the workload's a little bit much. That's what's hard. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm already blown away and I'm already like overwhelmed by the amount of work that you had to do. And it's not even, I don't have to do this at all. Like, it's a crazy amount that they load on your plate for sure. Mm.
Yeah. And like I say, you're walking on day one and you are walking into employment on day one. And as a young person, when a lot of your friends might be going to university and just sort of, I don't know, partying or spending a lot of time with other young people, you're expected to go into that workplace and behave like a professional.
And you're like 19. Yeah. And you're like, I don't really know how to do that yet. I don't know what a professional does.
Yeah, exactly. But the biggest takeaway for me is that everyone is there to support you. And your employer is signed up to provide an apprenticeship. They're there to support you through the process. They know you're not going to know everything. They know you've got a big workload. So if hopefully a good employer, my employer was very good and very supportive, they're there to sort of prop you up along the way and help you through the process. So it's nice. Having done both a degree and the degree apprenticeship, I would recommend the degree apprenticeship every time.
No, it sounds like an amazing experience. And I think you're right. I think when people do just university, it's such a shock to your system when you then go into employment and you do feel a little bit lost. The structure of it's completely different. How you communicate is completely different. I feel like the apprenticeship, the degree apprenticeship, it gives you a leg up. It gives you this beautiful combination of both. It's a lot of work. It's definitely not for, I think, the faint of heart. I think you do have to be like very organized, very on top of it, but you come out of it with a wonderful network of people, experience. You have practical knowledge. I love that you could learn something one day and then go use it, so it doesn't feel like it's just lost in your head and you're never going to actually remember it or be able to actually use that knowledge. That's pretty beautiful. I think it's a fantastic program. I really do.
Yeah, it's great. And I think employers are really getting on board with it too, which is the great thing. You know, quite often there's that separation, isn't there, between the university student and the employer, and what they're looking for and what they can provide is completely different. Whereas I think having the employers involved from day one really benefits the students when they come out the end, because they've been shaped for the industry by people in the industry rather than just university lecturers. So it's great.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good ad, and like 100% that will make your education so much better, because I love my university professors, but sometimes when like an old guy gets on stage and he starts talking about industry and you're like, I think you haven't been in the industry for like 30 years, which is like, okay, because you're an educator, but like maybe we need somebody a little bit more like recent and like more in it. So that's a very, very good add-on. The one thing I wanted to also talk about your education, because I feel like you're a superstar. You did so many things. And you also wrote this beautiful dissertation that I wanted to ask a couple questions on, because I think it's so relevant and so timely, is what can we learn from previous attempts to increase the number of women working in the UK surveying industry? That was the title of your dissertation. Could you kind of walk through what you guys discovered and your findings of that? And then did anything really stick with you that still you're like, oh my goodness, this stat's going to live in my head? Or did any of the results really surprise you when you did your dissertation?
Yeah, definitely. I can talk about that. I was actually really lucky in that my university supported me to publish that dissertation. So it's now published as a peer-reviewed journal article in Merits
Amazing.
Journal.
I mean, congratulations.
One of my absolute, I sound really sad when I say this, it's a bucket list item for me to write a piece of peer-reviewed published research. So I was really fortunate in that the university were willing to support that after my degree. So yeah, essentially with that, I wanted to look at, there's so many different programs going on which are aiming to get more women into our industry, get more women into my profession. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing out there that seems to have said, okay, well, these have run, what's the outcome? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My sort of motivation for the research was to say, what's happened? Where's the post-event analysis? Mm-hmm. Where's the data that says, okay, so we did this, we put this much money in, or we did this intervention, and then the end result was this. And then off the back of that, I wanted to ask people in industry, firstly, do you know that this is happening? Are you aware of these? Mm-hmm. And secondly, do you think that's a good way of increasing the number of women in industry, the way mm-hmm. that they've gone about these different programs? And the biggest thing that stuck with me from the whole thing was they're all quite fake.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, that doesn't sound very good.
Okay, so most of the ones that I looked at were through my governing body, the RICS, the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, and most of them seemed to be very superficial.
Okay.
So they'd have a program and they'd say, right, we're doing this. We're going into schools with surveyors. We're going to go to see children of the ages 8 to 15, 16 in schools. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell them about the careers available in surveying. When you dug into it, there's no information on how many schools they went to, how many children they spoke to.
I see.
There's no feedback data from the children themselves that they've spoken to and the young people they've spoken to, or from the educators that were there present. And then there's nothing that follows the people they've spoken to, particularly the older, the young people that are at that decision-making stage. Nobody had followed them and said, okay, you've gone
what
to this session.
Done?
Yeah, what have you done? Or would you be willing to consider a career in surveying after having heard from us? Mm-hmm. There was nothing.
No organisation, no data.
There was no data. And is it a proper intervention? Is it a real programme if there's no data? I don't really know. And that was the outcome for the majority of the programmes that I looked at.
Oh.
Which I found quite, that to me was sad.
Yeah.
Because it felt like they were running purely as a bit of a marketing tick box exercise rather than really to create any real change and to influence people and positively. Mm. And that was the biggest takeaway for me, that it's easy to get sucked into these things, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy to see them and think, oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's great that company, that organisation, that governing body is putting that effort in to do that. But dig a little bit deeper under the surface and really understand what's going on, because a lot of incidences, there isn't really a lot happening. It's just all glossy pictures in a magazine. That's obviously not true for everything.
Yes. Yeah, no, totally. You can't do like a whole brush, but the ones that you looked at, like that's scary enough that the ones that you actually went in and did a thesis on and did research onto, that there was nothing there. Like that's very sad. It's very jarring. You kind of expect like people to be a little bit better, to be like, come on guys, like it looks beautiful. It's a wonderful thing that we need to invest in. You kind of just believe that they also believe that as well. And then to maybe see that it might just be marketing, or it might be a little bit fake or a little phony. How was that reaction when you published this? Because it is a peer-reviewed public paper. How has that been post kind of findings and talking about that?
On the most part, positive, because the people who are responsible for those kind of things in the organizations that I looked at were quite pleased that it'd been proven that there wasn't enough resource or there wasn't enough data collection, because it gave them a leg to stand on to say, look, we really do need some funding. We really do need some people and some time to put this in place. So most of the reactions that I've had from people have been actually really positive, because I was a little bit worried about that as well, because I thought, am I launching an attack on my governing body, having only just joined like in November last year? And I think I pushed it in March.
Oh my goodness. You're still trying to get your chartered accounting. And then like, you're like, oh, and also, by the way, everything that you guys done, I think it's fake and it's out in the public.
So I'm really glad that it was taken as a positive, because that's what I wanted it to do. I didn't want to go out and just slate people. I wanted to go out and say, here's what you could do better. Here's the feedback from people in industry. Here's what people really think of what has been done. And here's the theory behind it all on why it needs doing as well. So it's actually been a really positive experience.
Oh, that's amazing. It's an amazing thesis. And as soon as I saw that dissertation title, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't wait to hear more about this, because it's such a beautiful thesis. It's such like a timely, wonderful survey to do. And I just think it's so important to get more women into these types of roles. Just thank you for doing the survey. It's pretty beautiful. And I love that it was used positively by the people who do want to make change, because there are people in that organization that want to make that change, but you're right, they probably didn't have the resources. So now they kind of have a leg to stand on. That's really lovely. Like, that must feel good to be like, yeah, okay, I helped my governing body and I made that change and I was part of that. Like, were you super proud of it? I hope you are.
I'm super proud of it, but also I just hope that it can be used to change the industry generally, not just my governing body, but to put in place proper programs and proper plans to speak to young people, to support people later in the career, to make sure that pathways to promotion are fair, those kind of things, that it was highlighted that that's why women are not joining or they're dropping out. And it's all discussed in the article, but I just hope that it can help. That's I didn't sort of do it for the kudos of
Of course not. It means something for you. It's you're a woman in construction and a woman in surveying. So like it, yes.
Yeah. And I just want more women to be able to make the most of the opportunities that there are in our industry and to know about the career options that there are and to be able to take advantage of that, because I feel like they're not at the moment, and I feel like they haven't been, and we've been aware that they haven't been. For a long time. Yeah. And we're still in the same situation. It might have improved by a couple of percentage, but it's not massively improved. There's no drastic changes. So we need to start and look at why. Although we're aware and although we have things in place, why is it not working? That was the intention of that. So
No, it's amazing. It's an amazing thesis. And again, thank you for writing it and thank you for looking into it, because I do think that like a lot of groups have focused on the starting points, but maybe not the results of being like, what has actually helped, what is working, what isn't working, where is our gaps. So that's wonderful to get a full rounded idea of this problem that's complicated and kind of known to be complicated for a while. So that's really good. To take a little bit step back from education to now your work as a quantity surveyor, I was wondering if you could talk about your favorite part of it and kind of what does a good day look like for you? Like, if you had the perfect day at work and you could walk through and this is what happened, what would that look like?
I think, that's difficult, because I think a lot of things to fit into one day there, like so many things. No, I think my favorite thing about my job role is the fact that I'm not just sat behind an office desk 9 to 5 every day. I love the fact that I can go out on site and I might be having a meeting with different trades, different professions, all present and discussing ideas and problems and workarounds with all different people, or I might be measuring on site, or then I might be in the office looking at a feasibility study or looking at doing a takeoff, a bill of quantities, that kind of thing. So I think my perfect day, if I could plan it out, I'd spend all morning on site. I'd have some sort of progress or review meeting, multi-trade, so I can get to go and have a chat with everyone, because I just really enjoy that part. And then I'd come back to the office for the afternoon and I'd get on with either some contract review, because I really enjoy sort of the contract side of things, or maybe a big takeoff, something like that I can get my teeth stuck into and really spend some time and get a bill of quantities produced, that kind of thing.
That's a good, well-rounded day. And I think that's like something that maybe people wouldn't think. I think when you think of like cost analysis and when you think of like more maths, I think people think like, okay, you're only going to be in an office. So that's really cool to bring back to be like, no, I go to site all the time. I talk to everybody. I'm really hands-on with the project. Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah,
definitely. And I've got friends who work on site permanently. So they're quantity surveyors and they are based permanently on site.
Okay.
They work for contractors. I do have friends who maybe go to site once a month. So I think that's the other thing about quantity surveying is that if you don't want to go on site a lot, if you find that is not your kind of vibe, you don't like that environment, you can go and work in a consultant's and only go out for a morning once a month.
Mm.
But if you do really like it, you can go and work for a contractor and you can be there
all the time.
All the time. Yeah. Or you can be a subcontractor like I work for and you can have a good mix, a good balance. So there's options for everyone, really. Mm. And I like that. I like the fact that maybe in my later years, if I feel like site isn't really for me anymore, there are other options to pursue.
Yeah, you can be in your office and you can hang out. Oh, well, that sounds like a very beautiful day. Like that sounds like a good full mix of people, work. I love the idea of like really getting your teeth stuck into like a good chunk of data or like a good resolution and a good contract. I love that. The kind of depth of it. I think that's a fantastic answer. Going towards kind of your next step, and I know we're jumping a little bit, but this is also something really, really cool that I know that you're working on. And this is, you're currently working towards your master's of law. As if you haven't had enough like full-paced education or like full-paced workload. And I know what you want to focus on is dispute resolution, specifically within the construction industry. Could you kind of describe what that would look like or what would the role be for dispute resolution? Why dispute resolution? Why are you like, that's my thing? And then this career change of like why that's important to you and kind of the next step.
Yeah, it's... quantity surveyors can be dispute resolution specialists, so I would still be a quantity surveyor. It's just a different, again, much like a consultancy, your contractor, your subcontractor, it's just another branch of quantity surveying, really. Mm. And it's more the focus on when things go wrong, when there's been an issue, when parties disagree about what a contract says or what they ought to have done or what they haven't done, working out the resolution to that and finding the balance between different parties in a contract, looking for the solution. It's something that when I was doing my degree, I always really enjoyed the construction law modules. I don't know, I just never really considered that aspect of things. Mm-hmm. Even when I was at school, I knew people who were going to go and do law and they always did English and history. And
yes.
Didn't interest me. It really didn't interest me. Yeah. And then when I started working for where I work at the subcontractors, and we were at the bottom end of the industry, we were sort of the bottom of the food chain, really, in terms of people trying to load contracts with sneaky issues.
I could see that actually. Yeah,
extending your payment provisions out, trying to bully you into paying less, all those kind of things, and they happen all the time to subcontractors, so it's something that I experience at work
all the time,
quite frequently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I joined my organization, nobody's really dealing with the contracts very well. So it's something that I've had as a bit of a sideline project to sort of tidy up how we're dealing with everything, streamline it, make sure we've got everything, all the information that we need, making sure we're meeting all our notice provision, all that kind of thing. And I just really enjoy it, that side of the industry. It's a bit like a puzzle, isn't it? When you have a big problem that's occurred and you think, well, how do I solve that? So yeah, I finished my apprenticeship and I thought, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
No more. Yeah. I'm done. And I got to about April, May last year and I thought, you know what? I've got this time that I'm used to using for education. And if I stop now, I'll never do it. And I was worried, you know, I've got my qualifications, I'm a quantity surveyor, I can move between companies, I can move between levels of organisation, but I just thought, if I stop now, I'll never pursue that last little bit that I'd just like to get. So I decided to do Master of Laws of England and Wales, so amazing. It's the full qualification, obviously then go on to do the legal qualifications if I want to do, or I could just go down the route of staying in quantity surveying, but
with a master of law
into the dispute resolution side.
Oh my goodness, you are a freaking superstar. That is a lot of work. That's very cool that is an another level of quantitative surveying, and it's really cool to have that in your back pocket with it, with contract resolution and dispute resolution, because yes, definitely as a sub trade, I could see you guys getting the short end of the stick kind of constantly, and that contracts are going to be your day to day. Like you're surviving based on those contracts and based on the quality of them. So that's pretty beautiful that you can then come in and be like, no guys, this is what we deserve.
Yeah.
And have a little bit more fight as a working for a subcontractor to have somebody that is a lawyer in your back pocket and also a quantity surveyor to be like, yeah, don't mess with us. We know what we're doing. Like it just gives the firm a little bit more leverage. That's very cool.
Definitely. I'm very interested as well. I'm really enjoying doing something that's a little bit different to my day to day. I'd say the level from moving from undergrad up to master's, that's been a shock. I enjoy academic work. That's why I kind of went down the route of doing the research, all that kind of thing. But it's another step, and it's a big step.
Yeah.
And nobody really, there's not like a bridge, as what I found, in between here's where you need to be undergrad and here's the level that you're expected here. Mm-hmm. And nobody explains this bit in between.
So at the moment, it's a little messy. That little bit to get there is a little bit messy. I do remember that.
Yeah, at the moment, I feel like I'm just like keeping my chin above water in terms of reading, answering the questions, doing the formative assessments and everything. It just feels like another level. It's good though, because it's good to be challenged and it's good to stretch yourself. But yeah, it's a lot more than I was expecting. And also the subject is so vast. I think I didn't appreciate, because I've been studying such a specific subject of quantity surveying for 5 years.
Yeah.
Looking at the law in the UK is, you just don't have enough brain cells.
No, it's literally huge. No one massive. Can. Yeah. No.
Law in any country, it's just massive. Yeah. And you know, trying to be able to grab that bit of case law and that bit of statute and put it all together into one really well thought out and really well analyzed document for your master's level. Oh wow. We'll get there.
Yeah, you will get there. You still have time. You've only been 2 months in, but still, oh my goodness, I couldn't imagine. Yes, the laws of England. Yeah, that'd be huge. It'd be way too much for one person. And I do find there's something about masters that I think it's almost like no holds backs from professors, that they're like, you're at this level, you might as well get to it, that they're like, by tomorrow, you need to read this textbook. And you're like, obviously not the full textbook, right? Like maybe a chapter. And they're like, no, the textbook. And you're like, this is an insane ask, that you're like, how could anyone ever get there? But that is, I feel like, that step up to masters that is a little bit scary and daunting at the start.
It is, yeah. Well, mine, it's supposed to be 2 modules per term, 10 hours per module, so 20 hours per week that I'm supposed to do for my master's study. Now, I find 20 hours alongside a full-time job.
Oh.
Like, I'm getting up in the morning and I'm reading textbooks, and I'm going to bed and I'm reading textbooks. Like, that is that is where I'm at the moment. But like I say, it's a good stretch. It's a challenge, and I am enjoying it, so it'll be worth it in the long run.
Oh, totally. It'll be so worth it and such a cool thing. And just kudos again. Like that's pretty wonderful. And going now from a total switch from Masters of Law to TikTok, because I know I love your TikToks and I love that you go through like the day-to-day of a quantity surveyor. I was wondering if you could kind of talk about the importance of education and inspiring the next generation, especially with it ties into your thesis, and how that's already been something that's so important to you is bringing up the next generation of women, but also educating women that are out there that be like, hey, surveying exists and this is a viable option. Could you kind of talk about that, the importance of that, and then that mix of education and entertainment?
Yeah, I heard someone call it edutainment the other day.
Oh.
Which is a new term, I know. Okay. It's like, ooh. I'm not sure how I feel about that one.
I don't know if I love it yet, but like, good job for trying for something new.
I guess it kind of works. But yeah, like I said, I'm not really on board with that one yet. But every time someone asks me about it, I sort of cringe a little bit on the inside, because I am 29. And I think there's that sort of stigma around being on social media and the silly dances that you do. But I love it. I absolutely love it. It's fantastic. And I was aware that people were doing careers content on TikTok. I'd seen a lot of people in engineering doing careers information, people in law doing careers information. And I thought, I wonder if there's anyone doing anything about quantity surveying. And I couldn't find anything. And I'm a big believer in the quote, I think it's Marion Wright Elderman who said it, is you can't be what you can't see.
Yes, yeah, so important.
Really, really important to me. And I've always stuck by that, being a STEM ambassador and going out into schools and doing all that kind of engagement side of things. So I thought, you know what, there's a gap here. And I could fill that gap. I can have a go at dancing. I can have a go at filming myself just at work, talking about what I do and talking about different routes into the industry. And so I did it. And the engagement has been so good. It's strange. Obviously, I have the TikTok. People tend to come and find me on Instagram and ask questions there.
Yeah.
But I'd say maybe every other day I get a question from a young person. Could I just ask, what do you do? What's your kind of day look like? Or could I just ask about the degree apprenticeship? What's the time management commitments like? How do I optimize my CV as a young person for applying for a degree apprenticeship? Stuff like that. And it just shows that's where young people are going to get the information. They're not going to go on, well, maybe they are going on Google, but they're obviously not finding it in an approachable way. And I'm just glad I can be there and answer those questions or signpost them to the right place on the internet to find, here's the information that you need about the degree course, or here's where you need to go to look at internship opportunities, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like being a careers advisor a little bit.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
And like I said, I remember at school having bad careers advice.
They told you to become a doctor.
They did. And it wasn't right for me. And really, looking back, I knew it wasn't right for me. They probably knew it wasn't right for me, but it looked good for the school.
Yeah.
I just think if there's an opportunity to provide good careers advice in a format that is easily attainable for a lot of people, like I don't have to put too much effort in to reach a lot of people, why not?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm there. And I still get older people in the industry who, oh, you shouldn't be on social media. Oh, you shouldn't be sharing your work. But I think it's a bit of a dinosaur kind of opinion, is that it's really old fashioned, and it, how else are we going to reach young people if we're not going out there on the platforms where they spend a lot of time?
Totally agreed. It is a dinosaur thing. I think it sometimes still happens, but you're like, this tool has so much value and there's so much power in this tool. And this is exactly like you said, this is where they hang out. This is where they're going for their information, and they're hungry for that information. And how beautiful that you all of a sudden get to like talk to young people and get to show them your life and get to kind of answer those questions that you had, that you wish that you had somebody with career advice. I think the antiquated idea was, if you're good at math or if you're good at science, you become a doctor. If you're good at English and history, you become a lawyer. Like, it was so set in professional careers and it was so limited that I don't think many kids were getting the idea to be like, hey, you should actually really look into construction development or marine biology. Like, that didn't really exist. So that's really beautiful that TikTok gives you that ability. And I love TikTok too. I love the little silly dances, and I think it's fantastic. It's fun. It makes this conversation that we're having now, it makes it digestible and it makes it fun.
Yeah, exactly that. And I've had a few people when I've gone to events, as in construction industry events, now come up to me and be like, oh, I'm a 40-year-old man, but I actually secretly love your TikToks. Like, I just absolutely love the fact that somebody is out there talking about careers and talking about the industry in a positive light. It just surprises me that more people don't do it. And it surprises me that the bigger organisations in our industry don't do it. You know, the bigger companies, again, the governing bodies. There's so much that they could put out there in terms of information to attract people to the industry that we desperately need people in our industry.
Totally.
We do skill shortages at all ends of the industry, and they're missing that sort of contingent of people.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like a lack of comfort, maybe, if they're still uncomfortable, or if it's like a lack of drive, because I don't think it is. I just think it's the wrong channels, and organizations are maybe slow. Thank you for kind of filling that gap in between until they get there, because it might be another like 5-6 years until organizations start using TikTok as it should be used. While we're on kind of the topic, you've been this huge advocate, and it's just honestly been such a joy researching you because you've done so much good in everything that you've done. There's so much good there. And you've been a huge advocate for women in construction. And the two ones that I know of, I'm sure there's been more, are Girls Under Construction and the National Association of Women in Construction. What has been something that stuck with you with this volunteering and advocacy? What's a moment that sticks with you? And then maybe a two-part question is, I think sometimes people are really, they want to get involved with advocacy, but maybe they're a little bit nervous about it or they don't know where to start. Is there any misconceptions you think that people have about becoming part of these groups?
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing that stuck with me is, so with National Association of Women in Construction, NAWIC, in my region in Yorkshire, we do a lot with, it's called a school to site program. So getting young women, putting them on a construction site, giving them a tour, making sure there's key people stationed around that they can talk to about their careers, and that's trades and professional roles. So we want to make sure it's as inclusive as possible. And then they come back and do a little workshop and a little quiz and stuff. It's all quite fun and nice. And it always sticks with me whenever you do an event like that, just how much those young people take out of it. I've had some fantastic questions, really want to know about the in-depth information about the career, how I get there, what I'm going to earn is always the big question, isn't it? But
hey, that's fair. Yeah, it's a good question to have.
Yeah, and I just think back to when I was a young person, I think I wouldn't have been brave enough to speak to someone like me if I came into school. I wouldn't have really engaged with a session like that, I don't think. So I just think it's such a great thing to see younger generations these days really are very interested and very forward and very driven, really. It's quite scary, actually. I think they're all going to come and take our jobs, aren't they?
Oh, 100%. They are a little bit scary. And like, I'm like, oh my goodness, guys, calm down. Like, I was just watching cartoons and like, yeah, I was really not as focused as y'all. You guys are monsters, but in a, an amazing
in
way.
A great way. Yeah. Fantastic way. Like, I applaud them really for doing it, because the young people that I have dealt with have been very impressive young people, and that's a credit to them. And in terms of advocacy and volunteering and that kind of thing, when I started signing up for stuff, I thought, oh, it's always going to be standing in front of a huge panel of people, you know, a big group of people, and speaking. And I think for a lot of people, me included at times, that's quite off-putting and also, it's you know, terrifying. Yeah, yes, that kind of thing. And you always think, oh, it's going to be loads of time commitments. I won't be able to do it because I have work, I have this, I have that. The reality of it is, certainly with NAWIC and with Girls Under Construction, it's as much or as little as you want it to be. The breadth of opportunities, you know, to do a podcast like this or to provide some photos and videos for social media, just to provide some careers information for some resources that you're creating, to go to an event and speak to people on site, or to present if you feel like that's for you. It's so varied. There's so many different ways to get involved and so many different ways to contribute. Even if you're the quietest person in the world and you don't like to put yourself out there at all, there's ways that, like the research projects, like the surveys and campaign work, that you can get involved with, which doesn't require you to deal with people,
really. To put yourself
out
there.
And the same thing with the time, you know, you can give half an hour a week, you can give 3 days a week. You can literally tailor it to your own schedule. And I think when you know that, it makes it a lot more approachable, a lot easier to get involved with. There's not this huge expectation that people are just going to put a load of work on you and that's all.
Yeah, agreed. I think like that is kind of a misinterpretation of like time commitment, but also level of what's expected. And I think you do see of like, it's only going to be really serious. It's going to be big talks to big panels. It's going to be all about policy. It's going to be very daunting. I know for me, public speaking is something that I've never really liked. And doing this is definitely a stretch for me. But that would have been me as a kid. I would have been like, nope, I don't think that advocacy is for me, or being part of that, because I'd have to speak up. And that's beautiful to know that there's multiple roles and that you can customize it to exactly what you need and to your personality type of time management, but also role.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, there's been a few times when I've been asked to deliver a session and I thought, how am I supposed to go and do, you know, I've got no teacher training. I've got no sort of experience in teaching, but the resources that organisations can provide you with and the training and the support from the teaching staff when you get there, it's enough to make it easy.
Yeah. I think they hold your hand.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And I did a few sort of STEM sessions, the STEM ambassador scheme in the UK. And that was going into classrooms with young people, quite a lot younger than I was used to dealing with. You know, teenagers done quite a lot. Mm. Very young children, really outside of my comfort zone. But the support that you get and the training, and they provide you with everything you need. And then the teacher's always there. It sounds daunting, but actually when you get there, it's actually really easy and it's really fun. It's not like a task that you have to do. It's an enjoyable experience. Oh, I always find it that way anyway. One of my standout sessions wasn't actually one that I delivered to young people. It was one that I delivered to teachers.
Okay.
And I think it wasn't just the fact that they didn't know about my career surveying. They didn't know about professional careers in construction, which was pretty shocking. But again, reflective of when you speak to people in general population, they just don't know what goes on. They know what an architect is and they know what a builder, but that's probably about
the
limit.
Those are the two.
If they've had a bad experience in the house, they might know what a plumber is because they've had a leak, you know, that kind of thing. But they also had these misconceptions about the industry, in that it's dirty, it's still old men that are inappropriate all the time, you know. They had a lot of really entrenched ideas, stereotypes, and they felt that they weren't comfortable advising young women to go into those careers because of those stereotypes.
That's interesting, and
I think changing those stereotypes in the older generations is sometimes more important than speaking to the younger people. And I'd say that reflects in the industry generally, changing those entrenched working practices where we say, oh yeah, it's 9 to 5, but you only get a promotion if you do 8 till 7, and you go to that networking event and speak to the right person in the room. And by the way, the networking event is golf, which is only open to men. And I think that that does reflect in our industry. I think that has to change, really, before we can see more women in senior roles, before we see more women coming in because they see women in senior roles, because you can't be what you can't see.
Yes, agreed.
You know, the whole chain.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think my future hope for our industry would be to see it embracing the more flexible working practices that other industries have successfully integrated already, to see us catch up with other industries, the more creative industries, I suppose you could use an example, but to see us be more flexible, to see part-time working be the norm and still see people succeeding and getting promoted, to see promotion opportunities that aren't dependent on seeing the right person at the right time at the right networking event, but but it is, and it needs to be more performance driven, and performance not in terms of hours, but performance in terms of
output,
a value added.
Yeah.
So that would be my hope for the future of the industry, is that we can manage that, hopefully in my generation.
Oh, yes. I love that. Fingers crossed. But like, for sure, I do think that we are going to get there. Like, one, I think that our generation is starting that change and really pushing for that change and educating the older generation and bringing them on board as well. I would love that to happen. I think that's a beautiful future goal. I think what was really interesting there is talking to those educators and talking to the older generation about barriers that they have put on young people based on their own kind of preconceived prejudice or notion of like what these careers could be or what these industries are, even without having that experience. I think that that's something that's going to stay with me. I didn't think that. I always try to think of, let's change stereotypes in younger people and younger women and let's get them into the industry. But I didn't even think about the older generation structure that's maybe still keeping these ideas alive, even though we're working our hardest in the industry trying to change it. They might be kind of still keeping us within that bias. That was very interesting. Sinead, to leave us kind of on, I think we've talked about the future hopes of construction, and I think I've had a wonderful conversation. This has been a complete joy, and it was so nice to get to know you. Could we end it maybe on advice to either young women who are currently within the industry or young women who are about to come up, that fireborn generation behind us that are about to come up, any advice to them or any advice to any other women who are in the industry, maybe struggling a little bit, maybe need a word of wisdom?
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that I think I've had to learn myself over the last few years. And so it's helped me a lot in my career. And it's that you have as much right to be there as anyone else. You've earned that place. You know, you deserve to be there just as much as anybody else does. So don't let anyone box you off in a corner and just say, oh, well, you know, you're less deserving or you're not invited. Don't let that happen. Stand up for what you want to do. Stand up for where you want to go, because that's the only way you're going to get forward. Mm-hmm. Especially as a woman in construction, sadly, I think if you just sit there and accept what's given to you, you miss out on a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And it's understandable, I think, maybe if that's like your first instinct, because like, it is very scary. But I love that advice of being like, you're so deserving of this place. And like, think of all the work that you've done to get here. And like, yeah, you deserve it. You deserve it. You know it. You're knowledgeable. You got this. I love it. I think that's fantastic advice.
I think it's taken me 8 years to get to that stage of being confident to do that. So don't feel like you have to be there on day one. I mean, if you can do that on day one, that's fantastic. And you're going to be, you'll probably be like CEO of your company in 5 years. But but yeah, it's definitely, the confidence is a learning curve and it will come. But just remind yourself, I deserve to be here. I earn my place and I can be in the room with as much confidence as everyone else is here.
Yeah, totally. It took me a long time too. It wasn't an automatic thing. So I love that advice. I think it's fantastic. Shishin, this has been such a lovely conversation. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on and talking about quantity surveying and everything that you do, all your advocacy, your dissertation. I mean, everything. You're a complete dynamo. So thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great.
You know, it's been awesome. It's been the perfect way to wake up and to have a Friday morning. This has been the best way to wake up and to start my day. So thank you again.
And I'm finishing mine, but it's also been lovely.
Well, thank you guys for listening. This is the Smoko Podcast, and we will see you next Wednesday. Okay, toodaloo for now. Bye-bye.